So we've got the next stage of our journey. I've handed out this sheet with a whole range of questions on it, and this will spill over into the next section, but I'm actually going to read the poem in English, and then you're going to work in pairs answering the questions. But before we do that, we're going to listen to two people's work who've responded last week. And I also just encourage you to have a look at the creative exercises at the very back of your manual here. It says, creative exercise option, take a short section of 4 or 5 lines from the Ninth Elegy and use these lines as the starting point for your own creative reflection on an aspect of your own experience that aligns itself with Rilke's. Or write a short 500-word account of what for you is the core of Rilke's Ninth Elegy. You might not be there yet. I'm not. Or Orpheus, compose a poem on this mythic figure that builds on Rilke's imagination. And then the last question, there are two typos in this, so please correct them. Write a brief summary of your experience of working with Rilke, and if you wish, address the question, how can the quest for sacred truth be illuminated by Rainer Maria Rilke's creative imagination? So there's questions that you might like to think about. But we've got two people who have written something. One is Carol, and the other will remain nameless unless they want to expose themselves or reveal themselves. Reveal themselves. Oh. So, Carol, would you like to...
I did the first...
Microphone, please.
I did the first assignment there.
What was the first assignment?
Take a short section, 4 or 5 line. Oops. Take a short section of 4 or 5 lines from the Ninth Elegy.
Yep. Okay.
So I'll read that.
Please.
Why then have to be human?
Rose, this is not what you're reading now. This hasn't been distributed, folks. This is straight off.
Okay. Why then have to be human? And shunning destiny, long for destiny. Because being here is much. And because all that's here seems to need us. The ephemeral, here today and gone tomorrow, that strangely concerns us. We, the most ephemeral, once for each thing, only once. Once and no more. And we too, once, never again. But this once to have been, though only once, to have been an earthly thing seems irrevocable or is unrepeatable. I was walking home from the train, and on my path was a man who had dropped his parcels so that he could answer his phone. And as I passed him, he said to his phone, "Oh, I was just startled by a sweet little old lady." I walked by and I said, "Was he talking about my mother?" Sweet little old lady. I never thought of myself as a sweet or little or old lady before. I walked home laughing and laughing at it, until I heard myself say, "He doesn't know the power and strength of this sweet little old lady." It was the beginning of a great understanding of myself that I hadn't seen before. I look like a sweet little old lady.
Keep the microphone close.
Oh, just a minute. I think now how to take the visible and bring it into myself. Not, quote, to clarify it, but to surrender to it. A sweet little old lady. I want to savor all of life, to be enriched by what I see, who I am, and what I love. Once, only once, am I here now. Once, never again. But this once, to have been, though only once, to have been an earthly thing. And then I quote, the saying of thing is the vehicle for transformation. The saying of things is the vehicle for transformation. And I found that to be true, very
right,
true. This
right.
was very, this was a very touching memory.
Right. So it's really interesting that your coming to that has in fact deepened your understanding of what Rilke is precisely saying there, about the importance of saying. That's really good. Yeah, that's really good. Thank you for that. Beautiful. And now we've got another reading. I haven't got a copy myself here. So look at that. Is not the secret intent of this discrete earth to draw lovers on so that each and everything is delight within their feeling? Threshold. What is it for two lovers to be wearing their own threshold of the ancient door a little? They too, after the many before them and before those to come. Simple. Reading these lines from Rilke's Ninth Elegy put me in mind of a visit my wife and I once made to Wrocław in Poland. It was June, the month of new growth, and our hotel was located right beside a public garden. Walking into that walled garden, brimming with flowers and shrubs in bloom, was like crossing a threshold into a more vivid impression of being alive. It is said that all lovers believe that what they are experiencing is something unique and beyond words. Rilke, I think, is drawing on this idea. Every flower in that garden, I knew, had an existence independent of us, and yet I felt that our witnessing and enjoying them made them, articulated them to themselves as well as to us, so that each and every thing is delight within their feeling. There was the additional sensation in that garden of being on the verge at another kind of threshold leading to something greater. Although we felt a hungry desire to see every bloom, every vista, every dapple on every colour, we knew it was impossible to have it all in that way. Seeing and feeling were just the beginning of what we did not think to put into words, since they were superfluous. Rilke is right to identify in such a moment the additional realization of other lovers before us in former springs and after us in all the springs to come. Simple, as he says disarmingly, in the sense that memory, emotion, and perception are all distilled and simplified in the one perfect experience. Beautiful. Really beautiful. Well, that's another articulation of an experience that's been triggered by the poem that allows us to understand the lines much more richly. Because those lines, threshold, what is it for? Two lovers to be wearing their own threshold of the ancient door a little. Very mysterious in the context of the poem. So thank you very much for bringing that into focus. Now, the last thing is this handout that you have. In this handout, now there's a few, this is the one with some questions on the front of it. Question 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, etc. So we're lucky in the room, we've got 12 people, that makes 2 pairs. If we'd had an odd number, we would have to have 4 pairs and 1 banana. But we don't have to go down that path. We're all pairs. So, Mari and Catherine, you're a pair. Carol and Rose. Sister Mari and Heather. Jared and Margaret. Hang on a second, we are a banana because Wally has not got his name on the list yet. So there's Jared and Margaret, and then you're Anne, correct? Have I missed anybody? No. Anne and Wally, and then Margaret and John. Okay, we are pairs. That's strange. All right. Now I was obviously counting there rather than here. So in pairs, you will be working on these questions. And questions are designed to trigger, deepen our understanding of the text. Now, what else we have in here, and this is for reading over the week, you've got Stephen Mitchell's parallel translation of the Ninth Elegy as well, which makes very interesting reading in contrast to the one that you've got in the workbook. And then also you've got Leishman and Stephen Spender's notes on the end here for the Ninth Elegy, which makes for interesting reading, but I suggest you don't read those until we've spent more time on the poem, because that will shape your interpretation and, you know, it'll disturb some of the possibilities of finding things out for yourself. So, let's go to page 20 in your workbook, actually page 22. And I'm just going to read the poem through once again, and then we'll start work on the questions, and we'll spend 3 or 4 minutes on a question and then share our thoughts and then move through like that. We'll probably get through a few of these questions before the end of our session today. The Ninth Elegy, page 22. Why, if it could begin as a laurel and be spent so, this space of being, a little darker than all the surrounding green, with little waves at the edge of every leaf, like a breeze's smile? Why then have to be human, and shunning destiny, long for destiny? Oh, not because happiness exists, that overhasty profit from imminent loss, not out of curiosity or to practice the heart which could exist in the laurel, but because being here is much, and because all that's here seems to need us, the ephemeral, that strangely concerns us, we, the most ephemeral, once for each thing, only once, once and no more. And we too, once, never again. But this once, to have been, though only once, to have been an earthly thing seems irrevocable. And so we keep pushing on and trying to achieve it, trying to contain it in our simple hands, in the overflowing gaze and the speechless heart. Trying to become it, whom to give it to, we would hold on to it forever. Oh, what alas do we take into that other dimension? Not the gazing which we slowly learned here, and nothing that happened, nothing. Suffering then. Above all then, the difficulty, the long experience of love. Then, what is wholly unsayable? But later, among the stars, what use is it? It is better unsayable. Since the traveller does not bring a handful of earth from mountain slope to valley, unsayable to others, but only a word that was one, pure, a yellow and blue gentian. Are we here perhaps for saying house, bridge, fountain, gate, jug, fruit tree, window, at most column, tower, but for saying? Realize, oh, for a saying such as the things themselves would never have profoundly said. Is not the secret intent of this discreet earth to draw lovers on so that each and everything is delight within their feeling? Threshold. What is it for two lovers to be wearing their own threshold of their ancient door? What is it for two lovers to be wearing their own threshold of the ancient door a little? They too, after the many before them and before those to come. Simple. Here is the age of the sayable. Here is its home. Speak and be witness. More than ever, the things of experience are falling away, since what ousts and replaces them is an act with no image. An act under a crust that will split as soon as the business within outgrows it and limit itself differently. Between the hammers, our heart lives on, as the tongue between the teeth that in spite of them keeps praising. Praise the world to the angel, not the unsayable. You can't impress him with glories of feeling in the universe where he feels more deeply. You are a novice. So show him a simple thing, fashioned in age after age, that lives close to hand and in sight. Tell him things. He'll be more amazed, as you were beside the rope maker in Rome or the potter beside the Nile. Show him how happy things can be, how guiltless and ours, how even the cry of grief decides on pure form, serves as a thing or dies into a thing, transient. They look to us for deliverance, we, the most transient of all. Will us to change them completely in our invisible hearts into, endlessly into us, whoever in the end we are. Earth, is it not this that you want, to rise invisibly in us? Is that not your dream, to be invisible one day? Earth, invisible. What is your urgent command, if not transformation? Earth, beloved, I will. Oh, believe me, you need no more springtimes to win me. Only one, our one, is already more than my blood can stand. Namelessly, I have been truly yours from the first. You were always right, and your most sacred inspiration is that familiar death. See, I live. On what? Neither childhood nor future grows less. Excess of being wells up in my heart. Okay. I would like us to start with questions 12 and 13. So in your pairs, look at the questions 12 and 13, and let's see what you come up with.
So, what is the
Excuse me, can I just ask you to pause for a moment and within this little manual that you've got, turn to page, it's got 59 on the top, 59, which is the last part of the different translation of the Ninth Elegy by Stephen Mitchell. And I want you to embrace this different translation in the context of what you've just been talking about. I'm going to read it to you. It's on page 59. Everybody got it? Jared, have you got it? Yep. Got it, John? Margaret? Yep. Okay, listen. Earth, isn't this what you want? To arise within us, invisible? Isn't it your dream to be wholly invisible someday? O Earth, invisible. What, if not transformation, is your urgent command? Earth, my dearest, I will. Oh, believe me, you no longer need your springtimes to win me over. One of them, even one, is already too much for my blood. Unspeakably, I have belonged to you from the first. You were always right, and your holiest inspiration is our intimate companion, death. Look, I am living. On what? Neither childhood nor future grows any smaller. Superabundant being wells up in my heart. Okay, so take that on board and continue the discussion for a moment. Too many pieces of paper, I can see that's a problem. I'm going to ask you to wind up in a minute. Most of you have had a look at question 12. Some of you haven't quite got to question 13, or have you all looked at question 12 and 13? So we've got 10 minutes left. I would just like to record on the board here some of your thoughts and some of your ideas. And, you know, if you can try and present them to me in a digestible form that I can put them up crisply, that would be good. So question 12, why is this the Earth's dream, invisibility? Now, in your group, did you come to something, a clearer sense of what was going on here? Any group would like to offer their thoughts? Microphone would be good as soon as you've got that. All right, I'm going to do it the way I do it in tutorials. We're going to start with each group over here. John and Margaret, would you like to give us your thoughts? Microphone, please. Why is this the Earth's dream, invisibility? What did you come up with?
The question is...
It's not on. The microphone's not on. That's it.
The question, you tricky one, because posed. You asked us, why
yep.
is this the Earth's dream?
Yep.
We get into Earth and find out why it wants to be...
Invisible.
Invisible, why it wants to be...
why does it? Yes. What indications do we get that Rilke imagines the Earth's?
I don't think that Margaret and I have come up with any answer.
Okay.
I suppose than to amuse that the Earth wants us to not just see it and say it. It wants us to realize it in such a way that the Earth will be transformed. I don't think we can say more.
No.
Okay. So, Wally and Anne, do you want to amplify anything on that there? Anything that triggers a thought? Or
I agree with the former speaker. Elsewhere on the farm, he poses the question, why do things exist except for the purpose of our responding to them? So I think there's a link between that proposition and this question. So that he's wishing for human beings to, in a sense, absorb the whole world, so its materiality.
So our response then, Rilke sees our response as an important ingredient in our whole purpose of existence here. So the Earth is set up in a way as a trigger for our response, which is something that can fulfill the larger purposes of being. Something like that.
Yes. We had a discussion in our group here, which we didn't share with anybody at the time. But the word transform, I thought, was not necessarily a satisfactory word because it literally means to go one form from one form to another form. But what is really positive is the superfluousness of form. If you have responded to it in the way he is urging.
Okay, there's a few words there that are kind of linked with what you're talking about that may mean something to some people. But the German word is Verwandlung, which literally translates as metamorphosis, but in spiritual language it's referred to as metanoia, the Greek word, inner transformation. So, yeah, that's beautiful. So now we've got Margaret and Jared. Is that right? No. Yes.
That's right. Yeah,
yep.
That's right. Well, I'm very visible. But I'm just thinking now, Earth is that your dream was really is green as well, as what he's saying.
Yeah.
And also, I said, so what does he understand by Earth? Is it all that visible? All the beauty and all the things you see visibly.
Yep.
And when I think he asks if, do you want to be invisible, it's kind of in line with his thinking that as he sees things like the sculptures and the lowly, you know, it's not the outward vision that he sees, but it's the inner being,
beautiful,
the complete essence of it all. And that's what he ends up by sort of saying, I've got a simple abundance of being, and then we agree with you, and that's the transformation.
Good. I don't know if that captures what you said roughly, Margaret. Earth's dream, Rilke's, is Rilke's dream, not the outward only, but the transformation into the inner reality. Something along those lines. Good. Heather. Oh, sorry. Is there a banana there? No, there isn't.
No.
One pair, two.
Yeah, no,
I am indeed. Mari and Heather, go.
Well, I think my feeling about this was, I immediately kept seeing death as the answer to everything.
Could you expand on how?
On my age and stage.
I'm just thinking here of Shakespeare's line at the end of Sonnet 146, death thou shalt be no more. There shall be no more dying thence. And for Shakespeare, the extinguishment of death was in fact the beginning of life. When you gave up a life which was in fact death, the poem begins, poor soul, centre of my sinful earth, lord of these rebel powers that thee control. So he paints this picture of a life that's encased, encasement image comes out in Rilke, encased in a kind of artificial fabrication that is not life at all. And when that is removed, death is removed and there is no more death. Something along those lines. So death is an answer to everything, and Heather's going to amplify that for us.
Well, I think Sister Murray had that, and that the holiest inspiration is our intimate companion death, in the other translation.
Yep.
But the other thing we did with that was to suggest that Earth is invisible because we've internalised the essence, and therefore it doesn't need to be external and exist because we've internalised.
How have we internalised it?
We've cut it, I guess, because we've come to some sense of limit and understanding.
Okay. Good. So now Rose and Carol. I think we'll cross question 13 off for today and we'll leave that till next week. Carol. A bit louder.
We sort of discovered that we're thinking about the earth as God, or
yep,
the earth as love. So you bring that into yourself, and it's conscious that you are bringing it. You are conscious to bring it in. But once you've taken it in, you become it. And you move out of your life, not necessarily thinking that you have earth in you, or you have love in you, or you have God in you. You live out of it, and it's invisible, therefore. You are living out of it.
Yep.
Excuse me.
Carol.
Oh, it's yours.
Good. Discover the earth as God or love, bring this into ourself and then become it, and you live out of it, therefore it is invisible. Something along those lines. And last but not least, Murray and your partner's left.
Yes.
Well, we hear first the argument is about being present.
Yeah.
To the earth.
So how is being present to the earth related to invisibility?
A sense of the interconnectedness of everything.
Okay.
Because there's a presence of depth to everything. Therefore no more need for words or...
Yeah. No more needs for words. And that just comes at exactly the point that the bell strikes 12. That's it, isn't that beautiful? I'm going to take a photograph of that, and it'll be up there at this address, together with the recording. And look, this here, this will also go up. I'm going to put this whole series of slides up onto there. You'll be able to access them as a PDF. The ninth elegy opens with the question, why we might not live as Laurel? Why cannot we accept life as we find it and constantly search for other ways and choose to interfere with destiny itself? The experience of mortal life is indisputable and our place unique and necessary to the whole. We cling to life, unwilling to part with any one thing, but unsure of what, if anything, we can take with us into that other realm. The poet knows human experience would have no voice there. Here is the time of the utterable, to name and give awareness to things which we, the most transient, have created as part of our experience and have given hope that in us, in our hearts, they can be transformed and saved. Even Earth seems to carry the secret wish to be invisible in us, and in his ecstatic adoration, for a brief moment, the poet takes on the angel's mantle of permanence. Okay. Thank you all. Now, next week, you've got all the questions there. You can prepare for next week by looking through those questions, and then the work of the bananas and the pears can be much more rapid, and we can move on to Duino Elegy 1 and the other poems. So we're getting there. Very good. Thank you all. Yes, you can take whatever you like.
Just the one that I was looking for in this book, and it's Rilke, but I don't know where it comes from, but it's over the page that says, beautiful, beautiful, but it's something I've never forgotten, and that's the book it's in. You probably might recognise it. I don't have anything about it. Where is it? This particular
one. Does it not say what the poem, what it is?
But it's, please read the last page, would you? Just quickly. You get the power. It's powerful. And also, did Leishman write a poem about a caged animal?
I don't know.
I think he did. An American poem.
Okay.
And I thought of it straight away when we were looking at the panther. Leishman. I don't know.
That's beautiful.
But this.
Yeah. Fantastic. Yeah.
It's not from the quotes. The book quotes often. He quotes Rilke
from the Book of Hours. Here's the Book of Hours. Prayer from the Book of Hours.
It seems to be a bit later on in the Book of Hours. Don't you think?
It does look like that.
No.
But from the English translation, I can't pick.
No.
Okay. A stone to rest. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. Your wife took a copy of the name of this.
Oh, right, okay.
But it's a lovely book. It's a book I remembered, and I thought, when we cleared
can
the
you
house,
bring me a copy of those pages next
will,
time you come?
I will, I can.
And then I'll have a closer look at it, and I'll see if I can identify, maybe I can bring it into the last session we have.
It's a very, it's very powerful. It takes in a lot of what I think
Rilke is on about.
Yes, but my problem is my age, I think, and I saw everything in terms of invisible.
Yeah.
Everything sort of going into that perfect transformation.
Yeah.
But this condition of complete simplicity.
Yeah, costing not less than everything.
That's
Julian of Norwich, that is.
And that's, of course, TSA at the end of Four Quartets.
I'm thinking of doing the Four Quartets next year here.
Oh, gee.